go. We are starting Parshas Chukas. I start off with this word every year. I add on a little bit to it every year because I always hear something else about it. Rabbi Cohn happened to speak a little bit about it right before in the afternoon program not too long ago. But I'm going to ask, it's a very famous question. We start off the Parshas Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe v'Aharon Lemor, Zos Chukas HaTorah Sheziva Hashem Lemor, Davro Bnei Yisrael V'Yichu Elecha Paraduma. We talk about the Paraduma, the red heifer. Now, if I would ask you what the reason for the red heifer is, you would tell me one of two different answers. One is Rashi right over here that says that it's a chok. Zos chukas haTorah. It's a chok. And we all know that a chok means it's something that's not understandable, something we don't understand, we don't really get, and there is no real reason behind it. There's no reason behind it whatsoever. The problem is that Rashi isn't consistent. Rashi in Perek Yud Tes, Pasuk Chav Beis, quotes almost the exact same thing regarding the Garden of Umos. It says, Para Aduma, Mashal ben Shifcha, Shetinif Palten Shomelach. It's like the son of a Shifcha, the son of a maidservant, that dirtied off the palace of the king. Amrutavo Imo v'tekana chatzoa. Tell the mother to go and clean up all this dirtiness. Tell the mother to come along and clean up everything. So too, the Egel Azov caused all the problems. The Para Aduma should come and fix everything up. But I thought you just said there's no reason for it. If the Para Aduma's reason is because it's cleaning up the mess that the Egel Azov made, the Egel Azov brought about Tuma. So the Para Aduma is getting rid of that Tuma. Then what does that mean by Zos Chukas HaTorah? What are we talking about in the beginning where we say, Levisha Satan v'umas olam, the Satan and all the nations of the world, Monin Etz Yisrael, oppress Bnei Yisrael, Lomar, Ma Mitzvah Zos, Ma Tam Yishba. What is this mitzvah? What reasoning is there for it? Levika Kasuba Chukah, Gzeri Yimel Fanai, it's a decree in front of me, Ein Lecha Rashus Lahar Acharei, you cannot think about it, don't worry about it whatsoever. So what's the shot? Is there a reason behind it or is there no reason behind it? And why does Rashi say both? So the Chassam Sofer uses Monin in a different lashon. He uses it as Lo Sonu, as Ish Esachiv. They're not allowed to go up to a guy and not only go up to him and oppress him. Let's just say you go up to a ger. You say to the ger, hey, remember when you used to eat this? Like point to him like a bunch of shrimp or something. Be like, you remember that? Yeah, you stunk them back then, huh? And like, go up to them and say something like that or say something terrible to a person who just became a Baal Tshuva. What the Goyim what they will do, is they would go up to Bnei Yisrael and make fun of us because of the Egel Azov. They'd say, you know why you had the Parah Aduma? Because of the Egel Azov. And they would make fun of us because of it. To which we would say back to them, you think that's the real reason behind the Parah Aduma? No, the real reason, it's a gezeira. It's a chok. And we don't really understand it. It has something to do with the Parah Aduma, but we really don't understand it whatsoever. So they would make fun of us, and you guys did the Egel Azov, and look what you guys need in order to be met. Tire yourself, you need a red heifer. So now we tell them, you're wrong. That's not the reason why we need the paraduma. The paraduma is a hoax. Yeah.
Saying that it's a gezeira means we really don't have an answer, so how can our answer be right and they be wrong?
What do you mean they be wrong? No, in other words, it's saying that that's not the reason. The real reason is something beyond us. You guys are saying that that's the reason, so that we're saying it's wrong. But that's one. That's one. The Taimi Menachem takes it the exact flip side. He says, they want us to give them a tam. They come up to us and they say, and I've had this, I've been Zocha to it. Rabbi Cohn just said that he was Zocha to it, to this before, where I went and I got my suit for my wedding, and I just become a rabbi, so I'm all high and mighty, like thinking that I know everything, you know? So I went to go get the suit for my wedding, and I sat there, and the guy asked me, as he was getting my suit, he said, so tell me, what's the reason for shotness? And no matter how much training you have in this, you never say the right answer off the bat. But somehow, Siat Dishmaya came to me, and all I said was, a king makes laws, you gotta listen to the laws. And for some reason, that hit him so hard, he's just like, you know, I'm Jewish. And that's the best answer I've ever heard. And like, he sat there, and he's just like, he was like, wow, that was great. And I'm just like, you know, I'm 21. Like, I'm a little nobody, I'm a little schnook, I don't know really anything. But like, whatever, the fact is that sometimes those types of answers hit people and are just like, you know what, that makes sense. The Goyim are expecting them, they're expecting us to give them a reason, they're expecting us to say, you know why, because of this, because of that, and they're going to say to us, oh, so you only do mitzvahs if you understand them? If you wouldn't understand a mitzvah, you wouldn't do it? So that we say, no, here's a mitzvah that we don't understand, and yet we do it anyway. Why? Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu commanded it to us. There's certain things that God commanded us, and he told us, mitzvahs, you have to do them, even if they don't make sense. And says the Tamei Menachem, takes it a step further. All mitzvahs are like this. You think we understand the reasons behind them? Sure, we can say it's because of the Egel Azov. But you think that's the real reason behind the mitzvah? I'll prove to you that's not right. Says the Chanukah Zatorah, when was Parah Aduma first taught to Klal Yisrael? In Parshas Bo, I think it was. In Parshas Beshalach. In Parak Tezvav, Pasuk Chaf Hey. In Mara, Shom Sam Lo Choku Mishpat. Vesham Nisal. They did a Chok and they did a Mishpat. Says Rashi, the Chok refers to Parah Aduma. They got Parah Aduma before they did the Egel Azov. Before they even got the Luchos. They got the Parah Aduma before. And if the Parah Aduma's whole reason is because of the Egel Azov, then you got a problem. Why was Parah Aduma given before the Egel Azov ever occurred? So it must be that the reasoning is off. It must be that we're off, and that's not the real reason behind it. That really it's a chok and it's a bleat talmud. I'm sorry?
Before with Ne'amakwa?
Before with them.
Doesn't it say that Hashem brings the refuah first?
Oh, the refuah before the maka comes. 100% that he's maktim refuah la maka. 100% that he makes sure the refuah is there. I mean, think about it. The Avos kept Pesach. We have a whole, there's a whole Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer about Yitzchak and Yaakov. When Yitzchak was giving the brachos to Yaakov, that it was the Pesach Seder. That he had asked for, that Yaakov brought him two goats, one for the Korban Chagiga, one for the Korban Pesach. He came inside, they sat down together, he brought wine for the Arba Kosos. They sat and they leaned. And the reason why Yaakov Yinu got up to open up the door is because he was about to yell out, Shvokha Maskha El Agoyim. He was going to do Elio and Avi when he opened up the door and he yelled out, Shvokha Maskha El Agoyim, Eshalok Rucha, and he called it out an Esav. There's a pshatin that the Avos kept these mitzvahs. What mitzvahs were there? They didn't have the reason for Yitzias Mitzrayim. They didn't have the reason for all these. Can you imagine? What do you think the Seder was like? So, in another 340 years, our children will leave Egypt. what kind of a Seder is it? But they had it. And the pshat behind it was because there's a reason why we do these mitzvahs. And those reasons we may not understand. HaKadosh Baruch Hu understands. We may attribute it to something and say, you know why we have a Pesach Seder? Because we left Mitzrayim. But that's not the real reason. And if we wouldn't have left Mitzrayim, we would still have a Pesach Seder for something. The Torah was given 2,000 years before the world existed. How you understand that, I have no clue, and I'm not going to ask anybody here. But the fact is, it was given. What was in that Torah? The same mitzvos, but without reasons. But without the reasons. Without any sibah behind them. That's the idea behind the ego, the Parah Aduma. Sure, you can say it's from the ego itself, and that's a nice little, cute little thing to add on, and that's why Rashi said at the very end of the parasha, by the way, it's the mother cleaning up the tzoah of the kid. But that's not the real reason. The real reason is beyond us. Nothing to talk about. That was from the Chanukah Torah, that's from the Tamei Menachem, that's what they say. The Likutei Yoshua. If they ask me who this sefer is, I have no clue. I used to daven in this Mizrahi shul that was right below my house. It was like a bumblebee shul. It looked like a bumblebee hive. It was a very cool looking shul. So I used to daven there. And one time during laning, they had a mistake in the Torah and they had a couple extra minutes. So I looked to the side. They had random sfarim on the shelves. So I pulled out one sefer, the Likutei Yoshua. I got six good boards out of it. Three in Parshas Korah, two in Hukas, and one in Balak. So the other ones I haven't set out. But this one was absolutely unbelievable. He says the whole pshat behind why it's all mida keneged mida. What did they say by the Egel Azov? Where's Moshe Rabbeinu? Lo yadanu mehayolo. We don't know where he went. So mida keneged mida, because they did the Egel Azov, they said lo yadanu, we don't know where he went. Mida keneged mida, they have no idea why there's such a thing as the Parah Aduma. They don't know how it works. They don't know what it's for. They don't have any clue about the Parah Aduma. The Parah Aduma is something that's beyond even Shlomo. Amarti achkamon. Shlomo Melech said I would be smart. The Rechol Kamiani, it's way too far away from me. It's too far. I can't understand it. And the Miam Loeis points out an unbelievable thing. We don't even know what Tuma is. Can anybody here explain to me what Tuma is? Can you explain to me why a person becomes Tame? How a person you can tell me how. You can tell me how. But you tell me what Tuma is? You don't see it on a person. You can't find it on a person. What is Tuma? Define for me in the English language Tuma. And you're going to tell me impurity. What is impurity? What does that mean? What does that become? The pshat is, if you don't know what Tuma is, how are you supposed to know how to get rid of it? How are you supposed to know all the ashes of the Parah Aduma get rid of it? Of course you don't understand how the Parah Aduma works. You don't know what it is in the first place in order to take it away.
Why? Then that makes sense. Then why would there be a steer in the Rashi? I mean, if that's just say that it's.
That's really what we're coming out to. That what?
That's the bottom line. Like, yeah, this is why it was instituted, but we still don't know why.
You don't know the real pshat behind the tumah. Right. Exactly. We don't really know the pshat behind the tumah. That's the idea behind this entire thing. Okay, I say that every year. That's a lot of fun. Okay. We spoke about this a little bit before. I don't know if anybody heard what I put online on the website, the whole thing about Parsha Shlach. So in Parsha Shlach, I did most of this board. And I started this off when we were here in Baal Lusva about Miriam and Moshe and Aaron, why Miriam wasn't zocheh to go inside Eretz Yisrael. I'm going to finish it off now. Now is the finishing touches. The finishing touches in this week's Parsha, after the Paraduma, we know what happens. Miriam passes away. The Ada lost water. There's no water there for the Ada. They get very, very thirsty. Moshe and Aaron go and they're supposed to speak to the rock. And instead of speaking to the rock, they hit the rock. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to them, Yan Asher Lo Emantem Bi, you didn't believe in me, Lakti Sheni, to make me a Kiddush Hashem, therefore you're not going to go inside Eretz Yisrael. A crazy punishment for doing something which seemingly is totally off your rocker. Why in the world did Moshe and Aaron hit the rock? So we're going to talk about that, but first, to understand what's going on here. Miriam's tikkun was gone with the Meraglim. We know that Miriam spoke Lashon Hara about Moshe in front of Aaron. And we know that Lashon Hara kills three. Lashon Hara kills the teller, the one who hears it, and the one that's spoken about. So all three of them had a death, a decree, a gezerah of Misa, going to the Chassam Sofer, and all three of them, for them to die and not go into Eretz Yisrael, they had to die. However, they had a chance to do a tikkun. They had a chance to fix up that chait. What was the chance? Parsha Shlach. Shlach lecha anashim. Show them how powerful Dibur is. Show them how powerful Lashon Hara is. And if they learn from that, and Bnei Yisrael does not speak Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael, if they learn from that and the Meraglim come back and everything's all good, then you guys get to all go inside Eretz Yisrael. Because they'll have learned from Miriam. And Miriam, although she spoke Lashon Hara, she did something bad, it'll cause a tikkun for Klai Yisrael. It'll do something good for Klai Yisrael because they'll see how powerful your mouth is, how powerful the Dibur is. However, we know what happened with the Meraglim. The Meraglim spoke Lashon Hara, even though Moshe Rabbeinu tried as hard as he could. He put in the Meraglim. He gave the neshamas of the Shvatim to the Meraglim. He gave over, as we spoke about that before, he gave over Yoshua. He gave an extra letter. He made Kalev go over to the Ma'ariz Machpelah to go daven by Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. He did as much as he could, but it wasn't enough. The Meraglim sinned, and Miriam had to die. But that was just Miriam. Moshe and Aaron had one more chance that was right here. After Miriam's death, and they saw Miriam died. Now, why did she die? Everybody looked at her and said, why did she die? Why did she not merit to be buried in Eretz Yisrael? It's even more powerful. Every woman in Klal Yisrael, according to the Amalei, survived and lived and went to Eretz Yisrael. No one died in the Midbar. Not one woman died who left Mitzrayim. Only Miriam. Why did Miriam die? So they all asked the question. They all said, because she spoke Lashon Hara. So what should have happened? Every single person should have said after she died, wow, look how powerful our speech is. But again, they didn't do it. And immediately, as soon as that happened, listen, three psukim in a row.
All the women are going to survive at the end of the day.
But they saw that they were survived up until now. Even though this is the 40th year. This is the 40th year. Over the past 39 years, the men from the ages of 20 to 60 are dropping like flies. They've lost every single one of them. And yet the women are all alive. Now, one woman died naturally, unnaturally, anything. Not one woman died. You'd think that they would have looked at themselves and said, what's going on over here? But look at what happens. In Beis Gimel, if only we would have died beforehand. Why do you bring us over here? To die there. To be rid of us and our animals. Why bring us up from Mitzrayim? To bring us to this evil place. We don't have anything to eat. We don't have anything to drink. This is ridiculous. Moshe saw that and got angry. Look at what happened to Miriam because of bad lashon. And now you guys are going to do this? How could you guys do this? What's wrong with you? That's why he got so angry. Because after seeing what happened to Miriam and knowing why Miriam had to die, yet still you guys are going to speak like this. You're going to speak so harshly. You're going to say, if only we would have died before. How could you guys have done such a thing? To that, Aaron and Moshe's chance is a very, very easy tikkun. The tikkun is, show them again how powerful Dibur is. Go and speak to the rock. Don't hit it. Don't do anything but speech. Be medaber to the rock. Speak to the rock. And when you show that rock that you can speak to it, and the water, the rock will bring forth its water, Bnei Yisrael make a kal v'chomer. Rashi mentions this kal v'chomer. If something that's inanimate listens to the Devor and gives off its water, something animate like us, Kol Shekein. We should listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We should be very careful with our mouths. Said HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe Rabbeinu, do this and everything will be okay. But Moshe and Aaron were under a massive, massive dilemma. Now here's the big problem. They did want to speak, but two things happened. Remember, Moshe Rabbeinu's angry. He spoke, but he spoke the wrong way. And we'll see what he said to speak to the rock. He spoke the wrong way. The Chassam Sofer is unbelievable. He spoke the wrong way and messed up. And because he messed up with the Dibor, then he had to be punished. And that punishment is that he had to hit the rock in front of everybody. That represents the punishment of Moshe Rabbeinu, but even more so. This is an unbelievable little piece. The Likute, this is the same. I'm sorry, this is the second Likute Yoshua that I saw. The second Likute Yoshua says, Moshe Rabbeinu did it on purpose with Aaron. Why? Because what was going to happen to Klal Yisrael? They had to learn a Kal Vachomer. Just like what happened before, when Miriam spoke Lashon Hara, Bnei Yisrael were supposed to learn a lesson from it. And what did they do? They went to with the Meraglim and they didn't learn it. And they got punished. And what was their punishment? To take the next 39 years and die in the desert. For the next 39 years, for every single one of them to die in the desert. An unbelievable punishment. Said Moshe and Aaron, if we do this right now and speak to the rock, do you really think Bnei Yisrael is going to listen? Do you really think Bnei Yisrael is going to listen to this Kal Vachomer? You think they're going to do this Kal Vachomer? You think they're going to learn from it and be careful with the words? Of course they're not going to. They haven't up until now. Look what just happened. Miriam died, and look at them right now. Of course they're not going to. So Moshe and Aaron did an unbelievable ultimate sacrifice. They sacrificed themselves. They were willing to kill themselves and show Bnei Yisrael, instead of showing Bnei Yisrael the power of Dibor like they were supposed to do, instead they purposely hit the rock instead of speaking to it. Instead of speaking in the right way. To show Bnei Yisrael, to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we don't want Bnei Yisrael to be punished for their problems and not being able to learn the Kal Vachomer. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, listen, I understand what you guys are doing. I understand that you were trying to save Klal Yisrael from any future punishments from me, because they could have made that Kal Vachomer and they wouldn't have made it. I understand that, but that still means that you guys have to die. That still means that you're going to have to take the fall for it. Somebody is going to have to die for this chait, and even though it would have been Bnei Yisrael, and there would have been a punishment for them, now it's going to be you guys. Now you guys are going to have to die. The Likutei Yoshua. But it's an unbelievable answer to the whole flow of what's going on here. Moshe and Aaron finally had their tikkun. Finally, this is it. If Bnei Yisrael would have learned from this, they would have gone straight inside Eretz Yisrael. And Moshe and Aaron looked at each other, and they spoke to each other, and they said, we can't do it. We can't do it. It's either us or all of Klal Yisrael. What do we choose? We choose us. We'd rather die rather than let Klal Yisrael be punished again for not learning the correct how to use their deal. I'm sorry? What's going to happen to what?
How could it possibly be if they went against the will of Hashem that they'd be better off?
Not that they went against the will. Who says it's not what exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted? But the idea is that Moshe and Aaron were the ultimate leaders. That they're the ultimate leaders. They're willing to sacrifice themselves instead of sacrificing Klal Yisrael. They were given that choice, just like Shlach Lecha Nashim. They were given the choice. It was up to them. They did it. They did this, yeah.
Did they learn the second time?
Did they learn what?
The lesson?
They never learned the lesson. Look at Klal Yisrael today. Do people able to control their Dibor? I can't control my Dibor, and I could be in the middle of a speech and I'll still speak Lashon Hara. it's unbelievable how much the Satan has us when it comes to Lashon Hara. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. There's no one that learned that lesson. And Bnei Yisrael is just not ready for that lesson. When we're ready for that lesson, that's what the Chafetz Chaim says, Mashiach will immediately come. When Bnei Yisrael are able to control their words, that's what caused the destruction in the second base of Mikdash. When we bring it back and we stop doing it, that's going to immediately, Mashiach's going to come. Because that's the time for us to, we fix up everything. We fixed up the main problem. You see, you want to know how powerful Dibor is? I didn't want to say this story, but it's such a crazy story. Rabbi Kiva Eger, the Nesivis, and Chassam Sofer were sitting together. The Nesivis came to visit Rabbi Kiva Eger, and Rabbi Kiva Eger's son-in-law was Chassam Sofer. So the Nesivis, Samishpat, came to come visit them. He walked inside Rabbi Kiva Eger and said, oh, he's such a guy. Come sit down, we'll have a whole big meal. So Rabbi Kiva Eger called him the Shamashim, all the servants and all the Talmidim, and they all sat down to a massive meal. So they were sitting, and finally Rabbi Kiva Eger said to the Nesivis, new, say something. I want to hear a Dvar Torah. So it's the Nesivis. You know, the Nesivis said, I've been learning Kosher Mishpat, and I decided to say the following. He gave a whole long board, a nice little pilpul. Rabbi Kiva Eger said, after it was finished, very nice, turned to his son-in-law and said, what do you think? So the Chassam Sofer looked at it and said, I've got kashas. And he gave over like six different kashas, like blasting kashas, knocking out the entire Nesivis' board, destroying the whole Nesivis, destroying everything. So Nesivis had a bit of Chalisha's Adas. Like, oh my gosh, I just said this word in front of Rebbe Kivager and I was nailed. You know, the Chassam Sofer nailed me. What am I supposed to do? So Rebbe Kivager turned to the Shamish, seeing that the Nesivas were so upset, turned to the Shamish, the guy who was serving them at the table, and said to him, "Nu, what do you think?" So the Shamish said, "Well, I think I can answer the Chassam Sofer's questions." And he answered all six of the questions and then brought a couple rayas to the Nesivas' shot. They turned the Chassam Sofer, and the Chassam Sofer said, "It's not fair. My father can make a wall talk." Listen to this shot. Remeir Milublin was an anacle of the Chassam Sofer. He heard this story, and he said, the shot behind it is the following. There's no way the Shamish heard what was going on. He's walking in and out of the room, taking the food in, taking the food out. He's a shop. Listen to Nesivas giving a board over to Rebbe Kivager. There's no way in the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer had kashas on it. This is not a simple, you know, the Shamish is just a normal guy. But Rebbe Kivager saw that the Nesivas had chalishas and das. He didn't want to have to answer up the Chassam Sofer to make the Chassam Sofer feel like Rebbe Kivager was against him. So what he did was he made the Shamish talk. He made the Shamish talk. He put his words into the Shamish's mouth, put his thoughts into the Shamish's mouth, and made the Shamish speak out everything. So what the Chassam Sofer said was, that's not from the Shamish. That's not from the Shamish. It's from Rebbe Kivager. He knew it. He said, it's not fair. Like, if I want to go up against Rebbe Kivager, like, okay, that's hard, you know? That's all right. But the Shamish, like, I want to argue on the Shamish, but I'm not going to because I realize this is Rebbe Kivager up against me. It's not hard to make an inanimate object like a Shamish, like that guy, speak and speak out those things. Moshe Rabbeinu had the ability to make the inanimate animate. The same way Rebbe Kivager was able to make a wall talk. Dibor is an unbelievable thing that was given to us, but there are certain people who are given the ability to make Dibor, take Dibor, and put it into other things to make things talk, to make things be able to say things that they wouldn't do otherwise. Just depending on how kaddish the mouth was, the Shamish happened to be a very kaddish person, and thus was able to say such kaddish things out of his mouth. Rebbe Kivager did not just pick anybody. He picked Bedavka, that guy. But it's a huge thing. That story is an unbelievable story. It's brought down by Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin. That's an unbelievable story. Never, ever will you see Rebbe Akiva Eger in a Hasidish story. It's a book called Sipuri Hasidim. You'll never see Rebbe Akiva Eger there. That's why, if you see a story like that, you know it's awesome. Because Rebbe Akiva Eger has a story like that in Sipuri Hasidim, I mean, it had to have been the craziest story ever. So anyway, what's up with Meimariva? Just understand, Avi Ezri says that we don't understand why a king gets angry at his servants, let alone why a Kadosh Baruch Hu gets angry at Moshe Rabbeinu. But we can darshan. I have my own pshat. I'm going to skip out on it this year. My whole pshat is to understand why he hit twice. I'm going to skip out on that this year. I'm really going to concentrate on everybody else. The obvious issue is, why did he hit instead of speaking? Why did he hit instead of speak to it? So we're going to give a couple answers. The Or HaChaim says he was afraid of a Chilul Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu was told the very first thing by Yidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Kach es amate, take your staff, the Hakel Sa'ida, and gather everyone together. Moshe Rabbeinu darshan. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell me to bring the staff? Why did God tell me to bring this staff? What do I need it for? So Rashi says to gather everyone. What do I need the staff to gather everyone for? Must be darshaned Moshe Rabbeinu, and he wasn't wrong, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu not only wants me to speak to the rock, but also wants me to hit the rock. But he was mesupik. He didn't know. Does Hashem want me to just speak? Or does Hashem want me to speak and hit? And it said like this. If I speak to the rock and it doesn't bring out water, what's that going to be? Massive Chilul Hashem. People look at me and say like, no. I'm going to be like, I don't know. I don't know what to do. But it was all because I misunderstood. But if I speak to the rock and hit the rock at the same time, at least I'll cover my grounds. At least I'll do everything that I could possibly do. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put that into Moshe Rabbeinu's hands, and yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made him make that mistake. The Chilul Hashem is, you just spoke to the rock, you said, rock, give out water, and no water is coming out. And the reason why is because Hashem said, Kach Zamata, you're supposed to hit the rock as well.
But at the end of the day, water is coming out of a rock.
That's true, but it's not coming out the same way that that Mitzrayim complained about, like when Kinim happened. Oh, well, the Mitzrayim, the Khartoumim can do it. It's the same way, like those types of things, like where you complain just for the sake of complaining. If people want to complain, they'll find something to complain about. That's what he was worried about. So he'd rather do, I know I won't do a Kiddush Hashem, but at least there won't be a Chilul Hashem. That was the idea behind that, yeah. It's a great. The Or HaChaim says purposely was given to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You'll notice there's no Shechina around the rock. The Shechina did not come down by there. Moshe Rabbeinu lost the Shechina for those couple minutes. And although he wanted to say Hashem, which one is which, he wasn't able to. And he thought that was the the people's fault, and that's why he yelled at the people. But he wasn't able to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say to him, "What am I supposed to do?" He wasn't able to because of that. That what? That there was none? Yelling at the people is another thing. The Or Chaim explains it as well, but we have to get to the Chassam Sofer. Tzitz Eliezer says that the rock needed to be hit. Yeah.
Moshe was not allowed to go to Israel because he hit the rock. You said Hashem wanted him to hit the rock.
Yes, in a way, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to make sure that this was going to happen. We're going to speak about that in Parshas Bas Chanan. We're going to speak about it, why HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it to happen that way.
But
that's one of the things. Yes. In a way, he does. You always have a choice. You always have a choice. However, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is pushing him to go one way more than the other. That happens by everything. It happens by everything, but we can't go into that right now.
Why was he liable?
You're not Moshe Rabbeinu. The same way you're held liable if you don't put on tefillin in the morning. That was him with this rock. The same exact thing. This was on his level.
If Hashem takes away tefillin and takes away a car keys, so you can't get minyan or dibartem.
He didn't, but yes. The Rush says the dibartem also means to hit. Check out Divrei Hayamim Perek Beis. I'm sorry, Divrei Hayamim Beis Perek Chav Beis Pasuk Yud and Yeshaya Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Dalet. In both places, the word dibor really means to hit. So Lamaisa, the whole dibor wasn't a problem. The dibor wasn't a problem whatsoever. So what's the problem? So the Balaturim says that it was a whole thing that he was hakel as a eder. You're supposed to gather only the tzaddikim. Oh, no, sorry, hakel eder. You're supposed to gather all the supposed to gather just the tzaddikim, and he gathered everyone. The Yalkut Ruveni says just the opposite. You're supposed to gather everyone, and he only gathered the Zakanim. Regardless, there's an unreal answer from the Chassam Sofer, and it ties in back with Miriam unbelievably well. The Rambam says that the reason for this whole hate was because of anger. He got angry, and he ended up hitting the rock. There was kas involved. Now, how do we understand this kas of Moshe Rabbeinu? We said a little bit. They didn't learn their lesson from Miriam. What? Now, here we go. The Chassam Sofer explains it in this way. There are three shemos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Three shemos that we know of. Aleph Hey Yud Hey. We know that from Mitzrayim. Yeah. There is Yud Kei Vav Kei, Havaya. That's the name that Hashem normally uses. And Adonoi, which is Aleph Dalid Nun Yud. Each one represents Machshava, Dibor, Maisa. They represent certain things. The way for Moshe Rabbeinu to bring out water from the rock was by Dibor. By Dibor. He was supposed to say Hashem's name and bring forth the water from the rock. What name was he supposed to use? The name that he was supposed to use is the name of Hashem, known as Mem Resh Yud Mem. Mem Resh Yud Mem. Typically, the name is Miriam. Miriam. That's why Bizchus Miriam, they got the water in the first place. Miriam's name is also a name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says the Chassam Sofer. And by saying that name, you can bring forth water from a rock. I wouldn't go outside and try it. It's probably not going to work. But that name is supposed to be able to bring about. But instead, the anger made him mess up. What did he say? He started off, Shimuna, listen please, Hamorim. Instead of saying Miriam, he said the word Morim. There's no vav in the word morim in the pasuk. Morim is mem resh yud mem. But instead of saying it the right way, he should have said Shimuna ha Miriam. Listen to the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu of Miriam. He didn't say it. He said ha Morim. By doing that, he messed up the whole thing. And by doing that, he messed up everything to be able to. And he ended up having to say, and by taking away Hashem's name, he ended up having to say Haminasela zeh notzi lachem mayim, referring to just him and Aaron. Why? How did he take away Hashem's name? Listen to this. Nikudos have gematrias. For example, a chirik, which is a little dot, is really a yud. So a chirik refers to a yud. A segel is three yuds. A shva is two yuds. A patach is a vav. A komatz is a vav and a yud. Says the Chassam Sofer, Miriam is a chirik, then a shva, and then a komatz. That's 10, 20, 30, and then 16 altogether. 30 plus 16 is how much?
46.
46 altogether. He instead of saying Miriam, what did he say? Morim. Morim has what's it called? A cholam. A cholam is 10. It's just a little dot. And then there's a chirik. That's another 10. So that's 20 altogether. He went from 46 to 20. 46 minus 20 is 26. He left out the Shema Vaya. He left out the Dibor. dibor that he was supposed to say. By saying morim, HaKadosh Baruch was showing, you left out my dibor. So because of that, he wasn't able to say the right thing. Everything went in the wrong way, and everything was wrong. Instead of saying, yotzi lachamayim, that Hashem will bring out the water for you, he said, notzi lachamayim. He was messed up in his words, and because he didn't say the right words, then he had to hit the rock. An unbelievable chesam sofer. It's right here when he said, amorim. It's pasuk yud and perek chav. Pasuk yud. Just an unbelievable chesam sofer. And everybody says the purposeful, as we said, a remnant to Klal Yisrael, that they're saying to Klal Yisrael, Bnei Yisrael don't do things after being told. They have to be punished first. So here Moshe Rabbeinu is showing you, I'm going to be punished, and then you'll learn from me that this is what happens. That there's such a power to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. Okay, what's going on with Edom? Edom, I have another board, the Meshech Chachma. If you want to see it, another great board on the Maimariva and everything, check out the Meshech Chachma. It's got a great piece from Rabbi Yosef Elbow, from a Rishon named Rabbi Yosef Elbow. He adds on to it. Awesome piece. But either way, what's going on with Edom? Right after all that, by Yishlach Moshe Malachim Yichadosh Melech Edom, he calls out he sends messengers to Edom, and he's like, hey, we're over here. We want to pass through. And I was like, no. So he's like, come on, please. And Edom's like, no. And it doesn't work out, and they walk around him. What is up with these five psukim? Why in the world do we need to know this? And I don't... It's such a great question for the Moshe of Zakenim. I didn't catch this the first year I had this question. Such a simple question. They're in clouds. The clouds are moving them. Why in the world are they asking to pass through Edom? If the clouds bring them there, they'll go. If the clouds bring them around, they go around. What are they asking? Like, they're not in charge of their travels. The clouds are in charge of the travels. And don't tell me Aaron's already dead. He's not. According to no opinions, when they passed Edom, there's no way he was dead yet because he was buried in Hor HaHor, and Hor HaHor is way past Edom. There's no way he was buried yet. So why in the world are they asking permission from Edom? And you have clouds with you. Let the clouds take you through. Anyway, what are they going to do? Do you mind if our clouds pass through? Just go ahead. That'd be one of the... I mean, I would let them go through. So what in the world is up with this? So there's a great answer for the Yonas Ben Uziel, but I didn't understand it until I saw another Mashiach Chachma. Yonas Ben Uziel says, in the future, they will take Edom. Because there are three lands that we'll get. We know we are going to get the seven lands right now, but in the future, we're going to get 10 lands. We have the Kanani, Amori, Prizi, Girgashi, Yavusi, Chivi, Chiti. Those we all get right now, right here, at the time of Kriyas, when they cross the area. And then after, when Mashiach comes, they're going to get the land of the Keni, Kenizi, and Kadmoni. Says Chazal, that's the land of Ammon, Moab, and Edom. So they were going to get this land in the future. So what Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to say was like a future conversation. We're going to go through you, and Edom says, we're going to fight you. And in the end, Bnei Yisrael go in anyway, and Edom just falls dead. And Edom is completely gone. So that's what Yonas Ben Uziel says. Says the Meshech Chachma. Unbelievable. What was the conversation really like? Why did Avram get commanded Lech Lecha? Why was he commanded to go to Eretz Yisrael? We know that there was no food there, and he immediately had to leave and go to Mitzrayim. So why was he told to travel? The Medrash says an unbelievable thing. When Avram traveled, he went like this. All through Eretz Yisrael. Like this, all the way through. One land to the other, from one place to the other. Went every single part of Eretz Yisrael, Avram Avinu saw, traveled on, went to, spoke there, whatever he did, he was all over Eretz Yisrael. Why was he commanded that? The Medrash says, for one of two reasons. Number one, to make a chazaka. And number two, in order to make it easier for his children to capture Eretz Yisrael. Because we know, Mais Avos Simon Labanim. And that when the Avos do something by traveling somewhere, they make it noach lichbosh. They make it easier for it to be captured later on. That's why Avram, later on, went to the Plishtim. Because he knew eventually that the Jews would fight the Plishtim, and he knew that they would need help fighting the Plishtim. That's why he went down to Mitzrayim. Because he knew that they were going to have problems in Mitzrayim. He needed to be there to help them out in Mitzrayim. That's why he went through all of Eretz Yisrael. So says Moshe Rabbeinu, can we go through Edom? And he's thinking one of two different things. First, we'll make a chazaka. So he said, Bederech Melech Nelech, let's go on the main road to make a chazaka in Edom. Says Edom, I know what you guys are doing. You're trying to be like Avraham Avinu. No, we're not going to let you through. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, okay, fine. Rakba Mesila Nelech. We'll go in the paths around the fields in the weird off places. Says Edom, I know what you're doing. Because where do you fight wars? You fight wars where? In the fields. I know you guys are going to come up against us. Even if you don't fight us now, you're going to make it easier for the Jews later on to be able to fight us and later on in time. So I don't want you anywhere near our land. I don't want you coming anywhere near us. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, sure. done. We won't go anywhere near you. So they didn't make it easier for us. And that's why it's taken us 2,000 years to be able to go back to Edom and to be able to capture that land of Edom. We can't get it because it wasn't easier for them, because Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't able to go through. Says the Maril Diskin, an unbelievable thing. Maril Diskin says that Edom did go out to fight, but Bnei Yisrael turned around and just walked away. There's nothing more embarrassing than getting ready to fight and the other guy saying, you know what, we just don't feel like fighting you. You're just not worth it. We'll just go. It's like two wrestlers going up there and one guy just saying like, yeah, he's a wimp. I can't fight him. Just walks out. I know who I am. There's strong people. He's also a strong guy. He just won the heavyweight championship. You know, he's all out there. And he said like, this guy, I don't feel like fighting him. He's a piece of garbage. I don't want to fight him. That's what happened to Adam. And I was like, come on, fight us. Holding their swords. Like, great. We're ready to fight you. And Bnei Yisrael was just like, you're not worth it. Sorry, we're out. And they walked around the other way. Says Maril Diskin, they came to the fields ready to fight and fought against nobody. The general's standing there and he's just like, everybody here? He's like, yeah. Ready to fight? Yeah. Aw, general, who are we supposed to fight? It's just a practice war. We'll get him next time, fellas. Everything will be fine. It's just like, that's what ended up happening. So that's number one. Okay. Kanani. We're going to get to Sichon and Og a little bit later. How Sichon and Og, I just found the craziest midrashim on Sichon and Og, how they were brothers. This was after, I don't know how you can even say this, but I found some crazy midrashim. We're not going to do that until maybe Parshas Devarim. But the Kanani we know, you know what, let's skip that. They spoke evil again. At the very end, they got very upset at the Lechem. They said, Lechem Aklo Kale, the ruining bread. So they got the Nechashim, these snakes that came around and tried to bite them. And we know that Moshe Rabbeinu took a big Nechash, put it up on a pole, and sat it in front of everybody and made everybody look at the pole. When everybody looked up, they lived. Ah! When they looked down, they died. And it was all, that's what ended up happening. What is going on with that Nechash on Nechoshes? And plus, Kadosh Baruch Hu told them to make a Sarah. Told him to make a Sarav. A Sarav is known as a very poisonous snake, a different type of snake. Moshe Rabbeinu makes a Nachash and a Choshes. What's the deal with that? Why don't I listen to what Kadosh Baruch Hu told you to do, and why didn't it work? It's the Ramban. You never get to see this in a Ramban. But this is a classic, classic Ramban. This Ramban right over here in this part is absolutely unbelievable. Says the Ramban, typically, if you're bit by a rabid dog, he says, everyone who knows any science in the world knows, it's a sakana if you see that very dog. If you see that dog later on in time, you see that rabid dog, you'll immediately die. Even if you only hear its bark, you'll immediately die. We all know that if you're bit by that rabid dog, don't go and look at that whatsoever. Even if you see it through a mirror or anything like that, you're still going to die. Very similar to all the way back in Perek Yotes Pasuk Tes Zayin and Bereishis, when Iris turned around and looked at Sodom and became a pile of salt. Says the Ramban, it's because whenever you're supposed to be punished with something, when you see it, you become it. So this guy, if he sees the rabid dog that bit him, he becomes rabid, and he'll end up dying from that rabid dog. That's what he ends up saying. It's an unbelievable thing. He says it's also well known and tested through the Chochmei HaTeva throughout the world, and I myself have seen it, says the Ramban, that if you are bitten, if you take the urine of such a person, and you put it in a cup, and you look at that cup very, very carefully, in each droplet of water, you will see a picture of a dog. If you shake it up, and then pour it into another cup, it'll take an hour. You can even sift it all the way through. Look at it again. It'll have pictures of a dog. It says, I've seen it. I've heard it from many different Chochmei HaTeva. Everybody talks about how that happens if a person gets bitten by a rabid dog. Unbelievable. The Rabbeinu Bechaya even goes on a little bit about it, about how that works and why it should be that way. Just an unbelievable thing. So they say the Pshat is like this. Some say the Pshat is like this, although this is not what the Ramban means. Some say Pshat is. Moshe Rabbeinu knew that if he would have made what was biting them was a Sarav. Hashem said, make a Sarav. Moshe Rabbeinu knew if he would have made a Sarav, then they would have looked at that Sarav and immediately died. Because that's the thing that bit them. And if they would have looked at something like that, they would have immediately died. Because the sickness would have become too strong. Instead, Moshe Rabbeinu said, forget it, I'm not making a Sarov, I'm making only a Nachash. So he put a Nachash up on top, which is not exactly a Sarov. Not exactly. So when they looked at it, although it has similarities, they were able to heal themselves by looking up to Shemayim and seeing the Nachash, etc. They were able to do that. But that's the pshat, that it was the exact opposite. But really, the Ramban and the Chizkuni and the Das Kanan and the Radak, although I couldn't find the Radak this year, they all say the exact same thing, that the pshat behind it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did it bedavka. You were bitten by Srapim and Nechoshim, put up on top of the pole a massive Sarap, and even though that should normally kill the person, when the person sees that, they should be off and they just die. That should happen. Over here, I'm going to make sure it makes them live. To show them that Hashem memis u'mechai, Hashem kills and Hashem makes live. Hashem mechatze u'varape, that I hit and I heal everybody. I make sure that everything's going to happen the way I do. So even though you would think to yourself, this is the worst thing you could possibly do, make a nachash and a choshes, it's going to kill them all. To that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, that's exactly what's going to make them live. That's exactly what I want to happen. And that's the pshat, says the Meshech Chochma, that not only, this is such an unbelievable thing, not only for those people bitten by a snake, there were other dogs, there were wild dogs around there, and there were animals that came around. Everybody was biting them, and everybody was getting sick. Here's the thing, if they were sick already, if they were sick already with any sickness, whatever it was, whether it's they lost an arm, or whatever happened, they had a tummy ache, they had a headache, they were at earache, they were throwing up, whatever it was, if they would have gotten bitten by a snake, and then they looked at the Nachash and Nachoshes, not only did the Nachash and Nachoshes heal them from the problem of the snake, the poison of the snake, it also healed them from all the sicknesses they had. They grew limbs. They grew back limbs. Anything they needed, when they looked up at that Nachash and Nachoshes, it brought back everything. It healed everyone from everything they had. And that's one of the reasons why later on, by the times of Chizkiyah HaMelech, the Nachash and Nachoshes had to be destroyed. Because people still treated it as if it was a god, as if it was something that could do anything. So when Chizkiyah saw that, and that the people were treating it as, wow, this thing can do anything. What do I need to dive into Hashem for? All I have to do is look at this Nachash and Nachoshes and I'll live. To that, Chizkiyah told them, forget it, let's take it and we crush it. And they destroyed it to show everybody that it's not the Nachash that's doing it. It's a Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's only a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah.
So did Moshe disobey Hashem?
No. So the Pshat behind the Sarap and the Nachash, I'm sorry, I didn't say that. The Pshat behind the Sarap and the Nachash says the Rishonim is that the Sarap was only mentioned because Moshe Rabbeinu was going to be afraid. If he saw these Nachashim, Moshe Rabbeinu was all over Nachashim. What happened to his staff when he was by Parah? It turned into a Nachash. It became a Nachash. Why? Because he spoke Lashon Hara. What tried swallowing him on his way down to Mitzrayim when he hadn't given his kid a bris? A Nachash came to try swallowing him. If he would have said a Nachash, Moshe Rabbeinu might have thought to himself, oh my gosh, it's my fault. So to that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Aseh Lecha Sarah. But Moshe Rabbeinu understood the intention. He understood that it was really a Nachash that was the problem. But Hashem was telling him that it's not your fault. Because of that, he changed it around to Nachash and not Sarah. It's a Rishon. It's a Rishon Dika answer.
So why Nachash?
I'm sorry? And the normal, and by the way, the normal answer is that Nachash and Sarah is the same thing. There are rayas to such a thing. Back in Parshas Bo, there is such a raya, and it does say it elsewhere. Tanin, Nachash, and Sarap are really the same animal. But whatever, this is how the Rishon
tried to explain.
There's
obviously a reason why it's related to two different things.
Right,
100%. So you could have made this Nachash out of anything. Why Nechoshet?
Nechoshet is because that's a very good call. Sarap has very... I don't know if anybody's seen poisonous snakes before, looked up poisonous snakes. They always have identifiable, distinguishing marks. If you ever go to Arizona, they always tell you, the most colorful snakes are the most dangerous by far. The ones that shine, the ones that have a shine to them, that seem to reflect light across them, those are the ones that are the most, by far, the most poisonous. It's not true in cobras in Israel, but it's true in every other snake throughout the entire world. The ones that are shiny and that have all the different colors all over them are by far the most dangerous. Stay all the way away from them because they're extremely dangerous. To that, they use nechoshes. Nechoshes is something that's maverick. It shines. When you shine something on it, it's something that shines off it, and it's got a very, very tremendous shine. So Bedavki used nechoshes because that represented the poisonous snake, the poisonousness of the snake. And he also, says Chazal, says the Rishonin, he understood that from the fact that he said Sarav. He said, oh, must be making nachash that looks like a Sarav, that has the nechoshes like a Sarav. That's how he understood it. That's how he understood it. Yeah, but it went back at the Egel Azov. And plus, this is 39 years later. Plus, 39 years later, something might have happened. They might have gotten, you know, they might have been in an accident since then. Something might have happened. Yeah.
The people people that were older than 60 didn't die?
Older than 60 did not die during those years.
Now, having a job is